keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on. Jazzy 88 WFSK, Historic Fisk University, and What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, Independent Agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. And from over the last hour, I meant to mention for those of you who are listening here in the city, and we'll be heading out today as we have overcast conditions in the city. You might consider an umbrella with you today as we have a 40% chance for some thunderstorms, maybe around the time some of you get out of your services wherever you go to church or house of worship, and a 20% for tonight, and we're up to 50. It's this whole week is looking just exactly like Tropical Storm Barry is going to dump on us, because we actually have this rain chances pretty significant on Tuesday and Tuesday night, and of course it continues over onto Wednesday. So this whole week, although our temps will be down some, much more, a little bit more pleasant being
it's still July, so that helps a little bit.
It does. Every degree helps. Today about 88. So we'll be at the optimum temperature here for our frequency. And that's what's up. We're overcast and a very pleasant, though, 73 degrees in the city. Now, as we think in terms of happiness, and I'm speaking to not wholly and totally, but largely the community of faith. And this topic is important because, you know, we have to be happy sometime. We can't all be moaning and crying. You know, moaning and groaning. And I told this couple that is with me now on the show, the Gibbs, that I wanted to have them back again too, because this is something that you just don't do a one shot on. When you're happy, you know, happiness, you got to work on it, just like you have to do everything else. And we want to welcome back Marjorie and Earl Gibbs. How are you today? You doing okay?
Yes, we're doing okay. Unfortunately, Marjorie's unavailable this morning.
Oh.
But I am able to facilitate perspectives from both of us.
Well, wonderful. I know that you could, because y'all been together long enough, you probably speak for each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, we do share common views, a common worldview as well.
Oh, definitely. Now, if Mr. Gibbs, I know that both of y'all are researchers and, you know, you work side by side and et cetera. Could you catch us up with how, you know, it's been almost a year or so since
last spring.
Yeah, how you guys been? What you been doing?
We've been doing quite good, actually. We spend much of our time, well, two things. We have a professional life, a semi-professional life, and then we have the social life. So I do project management consulting at a very minimum level. People who have issues, they want letters written, what have you, or even how to facilitate in some of their entrepreneurial efforts. And Marjorie, of course, she provides some consulting services in income tax reporting and, you know, business setup, things like that. Other than that, of course, we have a family, 5 kids. They're all adults, grown, married, have their own homes, live in different places. So we do spend some time, you know, traveling back and forth, mm-hmm. to you know, together with the kids, and we also have grandkids, 10 grandkids.
Oh, wow.
So that keeps us quite busy, and this summer, our hobby this summer, or part of our activities this summer, are taking them to some of the various sites in Toronto and Ottawa, Montreal, things like that. Quite busy, and a lot of, I write for a newspaper, and so that keeps me busy as well. Very, very busy.
Now you,
but we enjoy it. We are certainly enjoying
this
period of our life.
But you live in Toronto?
Yeah, we just outside of Toronto, a place called Milton.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just west of Toronto, about 25 kilometers or 25 minutes, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. We did live in Toronto. Toronto is such a metropolis now. I'm happy to live in the suburbs, to be honest with you. It's quite a challenge, actually, getting into Toronto. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I bet. Now,
as with most major cities, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we know that one.
Now, for sure.
Yeah, oh, we do. Now, Earl, I'm just going to ask you this cultural question before I go. Do you find that in that Canadian, because you've lived in different cultures, do you find culturally that there's a difference in, you know, happiness, or is this just a universal seeking of it or finding it?
So I would think it's different, and happiness really based on the ecosystem that's created for us to survive within. Mm-hmm. See, most times when we speak to individuals, they tend to purely personalized happiness. But, of course, happiness is personal, interpersonal, transactional, and transformational.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what aids in the achievement or the optimization of happiness is really the ecosystem. And the ecosystem begins with the family infrastructure. So that might be common. In other words, if you have a good, solid family infrastructure, it wouldn't matter where you are, what country, you know, what city, what continent. But what happens outside of that ecosystem is the issue. In other words, you have to go to work, you have to drive on highways. Mm-hmm. The government services, are they compatible with human needs? So there are two perspectives, if you want to say, regarding the happiness. But in Canada, I would say we are relatively happy people in terms of we don't have a history of any kind of military conflicts that would somehow shade our political views.
Mm-hmm.
We are a young country, and we are built on diversity. So obviously, we're very tolerant communities. So obviously, the happiness level would be, I would say, perhaps much higher than it would be, say, in the United States of America. Because there are more polarization with regards to race and culture, and likewise the history. We don't have this sort of history of any sort of internal conflicts and external conflicts as well.
Yeah. Well,
I think you have a double-edged sword because you're dealing with both internal and external conflicts.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, the history of, you know, this nation.
Absolutely.
That right there just adds to the mix big time.
Yes, especially since we haven't, I would say, if I might say, haven't formally, I would say, attuned, and that is critical to move into another plateau in terms of happiness.
No question about it. Aren't you from the Caribbean?
Yeah, Trinidad and Tobago, the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. I lived in this North American continent for 50 years. I lived in the United States for just over 5 years as well, under NAFTA. I worked in project management, working with a project management consultant firm, actually.
Okay.
Mostly with the automobile industry.
Okay. Well, knowing that that's the case, that in those three cultures, was there a happiness mixture, or I know the United States is at this extreme edge on everything because of the history of this country.
Right, exactly.
And in particular, the conflicts. But what is there a big difference between the culture where you were born and raised versus, you know, here or the one where you are in Canada?
Right. That's a good question, actually. You know, honestly, if I had to if I, by some mystery, to be born again in the physical sense, I would be happy to be born in Trinidad. What the good thing about being born in the Caribbean? First of all, you know, Trinidad was a great democracy as far as I'm concerned. We never had racial conflicts or conflicts of any kind that I could remember. People are happy generally. Mm-hmm. Within the context, like I said, beginning with family. And because we lived in multi-generational families, mm-hmm. that contributed a lot. And we lived in villages, so that contributed a lot to our happiness. What I find fundamentally different with say the Caribbean is that people are happy until they are exposed to another culture they perceive to be mm-hmm. better than. So you would find that, but that's why we talk about the Americanization of the Caribbean or you know, Jamaica, mm-hmm. Trinidad, what have you. When you get exposed, all of a sudden, your worldview changes, mm-hmm. your perception changes, your desire for things changes.
Right.
And that is what introduces the happiness component. So sometimes when people might say, oh, Jamaicans or Trinidadians are the happiest people in the world mm-hmm. because they want to make such a claim, I would say, yes, you're happy. Until you get that exposure, and all of a sudden you're not contented with the things that we have. And it also affects our psychological behavior mm-hmm. as well, because we are familiar with some of the policies or the way the North American country mm-hmm. responds to children. As a matter of fact, you know, in the Caribbean, children are disciplined. And that is it's the cornerstone of raising children was discipline. But that is not, not compatible with the North American context, how children are raised. So the discipline levels tend to diminish in terms of how children, the respect for the elders mm-hmm. and what have you. And all of that brings, you know, unhappiness because it is infused into mm-hmm. the culture in a different way that people perceived. I mean, even today when we go back to the island, we are like confused about the lack of discipline, and of course we are reminiscent of when we lived there and how we respected elders or anyone who were elder than we are, whether it's a brother or sister or aunt or uncle, even the neighbors. Well, that clearly diminishes when you come to the North American continent.
Right.
So the dynamics are so incredibly different.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say in that mix of what you just said, about the discipline, I think mm-hmm. as far as U.S., it has, every generation, it has slipped away.
Absolutely.
You know, because I know old school mamas and daddies would tear your drawers up if you didn't act
right. Oh, you smoked up. Anyway, of course.
And the whole neighborhood
that happened,
would.
Though, is I think put a real blanket over this whole question of mm-hmm. discipline, mm-hmm. and everyone falls, you know, under this blanket. And there's no real way that the system can clearly delineate the difference between discipline and abuse. So everything falls into the category of abuse. I mean, it doesn't matter how marginal it is, and that is what I find quite troubling, mm-hmm. because that is part of the destruction of the family.
Mm.
Because there are situations, of course, where someone might discipline their child. I mean, right. it may not be constituted as abuse, but because of the system and the society that we live in, mm-hmm. everything would generally be considered as abuse. I mean, I'm not so sure that the criminal justice system are willing to take sufficient time to mm-hmm. clearly understand. I'm not saying that they should tolerate or encourage, but they should understand the value of mm-hmm. some level of discipline. That may not necessarily mean physical discipline, but some level of discipline, because not only does physical discipline is the issue, it's discipline, period,
right.
as far as I'm concerned. And that is because the fear that people have in raising the children and
right.
speaking and in punishing in other ways, denying of whatever,
yeah.
I think there should be some efforts on the part of people who are concerned about the plight of society
right.
to find a way to have a constitutional amendment to the idea that that the family is really at the centerpiece of a great society. And that's not spoken of in terms of how we build better societies. It's always about our military might or yeah. our academic prowess, but not the family.
Right.
And I think that is where we are failing our societies, because not only when you strengthen the family, you strengthen the entire society, you strengthen neighborhood, you strengthen everything.
Yeah.
And when we introduce this concept of the kids are beyond any sort of discipline,
right.
Well, we have lost it all.
Well, and I would say that when they see adults acting out like children, I mean, seriously, and are undisciplined and out of control, there is absolutely no example of, you know, what to strive toward.
Exactly.
Know, I mean, it's, and particularly in the most powerful position in this country, acting out and being out of control and with no discipline.
You know, you're making a very, very interesting observation, because I relate this to education as well. I have written many pieces on education, and I've always argued that there's a fault line in our education system, because it's based primarily on what you call academic information literacy, and a true education should be based on five foundations of human development: spiritual, moral, social, intellectual, and physical. The reason why we see so many, you know, the colossal downfalls of people in high office, because our education system is so based on economics and based on a material driven life, that we fail to incorporate the spiritual, the moral, the social. And I would even say we fail to incorporate even the intellectual, because it's all about the educational aspect and the intellectual are two different imperatives. So education is more like road training, being able to do things, developing skills and all that. But intellectual is about understanding, you know, how to make life-saving decisions. And a lot of these top-level executives in a lot of corporations and in places of business, you can see the evidence of that lack of the ability to make these critical life-saving decisions and highly judgmental, dealing with judgmental issues, issues of morality, even issues of economics. Almost in every aspect of our lives, we can see the failure, and it really is the failure in the educational system, which certainly need to look at the new frontier of education in this new world that we are age we are entering into.
Well, definitely that. And additionally, as I think about the, you know, people, it's interesting. Let me talk about this on the other side, because I can tell I'm going to be going on for a minute. And because of today's Observation Sunday, to me, for some reason. Anyway.
Okay. That's fine.
If you have a question or comment, are you happy to the audience? Are you happy? If not, why not? And what is it? What is it? And if you have a question or comment for our guest, researcher Errol Gibbs, give us a call. He is author of the Optimum Happiness Index and the concept. And we're going to be going deeper into that, as well as his topic, one of the topics that he and his wife speak on, and that is black happiness and what is it. So if you have a question or comment, the number is 615-329-8810, 615-329-8810. If you're happy today, then come on, let somebody know it. 615-329-8810. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net, and put the life back in life insurance.
On the next Jazz Night in America, the music of Billy Strayhorn with the Jazz and Lincoln Center Orchestra. And we pull back the curtain on the man who lived most of his professional life in the shadow of Duke Ellington.
What about working with the Duke?
It's hazardous. Don't anybody ever do it.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Support for WFSK comes from AEG Presents.
Grammy Award-winning Herbie Hancock is coming to Nashville August 11th at Ryman Auditorium. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Herbie Hancock, August 11th at the Ryman. Sponsored by Nissan, proud partner of Ryman Auditorium. Produced by AEG Presents.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Already Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And we're talking about the secrets to happiness, optimum that is. Errol Gibbs, researcher, is returning back to the show. We had a really deep and thorough discussion before, but you know, this is happiness. It's something you got to work on. It's not a one-shot deal. So he is back today, and we're happy to have him with us. And in particular, here on a Sunday morning, because are you Christians happy? Well, could you show it, please? and speaking of that, if you have a question or comment, it's 615-329-8810. X, I know that you had something you was going to throw in the pot
well,
here. What you got?
Yeah, well, I appreciate Mr. Gibbs for being on with us this morning. And there's something that's one of his thoughts on this. Well, you know, growing up, whatever my mother and father said, that's what it was. There was no back talk. There was yes, ma'am, no, sir. That was about it, you know.
Right.
Now, and I learned this through, family counseling, that, you know, kids are supposed to have a voice, and they are supposed to be allowed to express themselves and et cetera, et cetera. So
right.
I do get what you're saying in terms of that pendulum having swung the whole other way, and a
right.
bunch of people in academia saying, you know, you can't spank your kids, and that's child abuse and all that. So how do you see this affecting this new freedom, this new... I see some people pushing back from individual perspectives, maybe a police officer who has to respond to a call and he understands what's going on, maybe a judge or two being lenient on case-to-case basis. But what's it going to take to sort of level this out just a little bit so that our kids don't end up in situations as adults where they just feel like they can just say whatever, do whatever, because just the way I was raised that way. So, you know,
I think what we have done, though, is we have really gone from one extreme to the next, theoretically. The fact that kids must have a voice was not prefaced well, and that voice must be within a certain context. And that is what we lost. The context is the respect for the elders and respect for the value that elders bring into the equation. I think that is where fundamentally we have gone wrong. Had we, yes, kids have, like, for instance, our own kids, yes, they have a voice, but a voice is within the context of who we are as their parents, or who you are as elders, or who you are as a supervisor or a policeman. So that fundamental respect, we have lost that in the path to giving the voice to the kids. So neither the kids or the adults understand that context. We can't enforce it. It's something that must be understood. It must be part of the very our genetic makeup, this idea of respecting within a cultural perspective or not authoritative necessarily, but a leadership perspective. And I think that is what has failed. And because of the new technologies and the amount of information, and information is not knowledge. So there's a whole heap of, you know, information swirling around us. And this is even being misinterpreted as knowledge. So it gives a false sense of knowing. So we have young people unfortunately, believing that they have the same level of understanding of life and worldview as an adult. Until we, I mean, we need a lot of time to really talk through these kinds of these sort of issues to get to the crux of how we might solve it. But I would say we are not going down the right path, and we are getting to a place where the playing field, there's an illusion of a level playing field, and I think we encourage that a lot by saying the kids must have a voice, and I agree, they must have a voice. But we have created this illusion that that voice is a voice of equivalency, and that is the problem. I mean, we experience it here every day with kids 10, 11, 12, even as low as 5, 6 years old, already believing that that they know as much as their parents, and they would even articulate it. So we give them a voice out of a context of the respect that we should still have maintained. Just like we build a car, and regardless of what it looks like on the outside, all the fundamental principles of design of the engines, the transmissions are the same. Well, for us, we don't understand what was the core that helped us to build these better societies with respect for elders and all that. We have just either thrown it by the wayside, or we have forgotten, or we have not taken the time to understand how we must maintain that nucleus, which is the respect that we must give to elders. And I mean, and it's biblical too, you know. And the fact that we're moving away from, you know, we're moving towards a more material-based society as spirituality ebbs. You can see what path we are on and where we are going. But all is not lost if we can somehow pull together our thoughts and maybe, you know, maybe back away a little bit more from purely academic perspectives and look at some of the cultural perspectives. I think that would help us.
So, and as far as culture is concerned, and baked in everybody's cake is European dominance.
Right,
it's
kind of
hard to to break from that. You know, it's everywhere, and it has been, and particularly in this country and across the world, it has been for forever. And you know, I don't know how this country could, is going to be able to. You know, there's a good portion of it that is acting as if everything is fine and everything is equal, and no one went through. You didn't go through any changes. You weren't slaves. That was amazing. There's that portion of it. So I don't know about our country. I'm not sure if you know, might be decades and decades from now before. You know, the larger white community realizes how blessed and favored they've been for generations and generations, and been prospering while so many have not and don't understand why the playing field is so unlevel. And as I make that statement, I was just glancing up at the news and seeing the Vice President Pence viewing those detention centers in Texas and all that down there, and then coming out and saying almost saying the people were happy. And I mean, his comments were just appalling. That you look at the people's expressions and you see what they're going through, and they haven't bathed and washed in a month and a half. And how is that happiness? I don't understand that. But he got up and made that statement. He didn't say happy. He said they were taken care of,
right?
And I don't, I don't get it. So, is it in the eye of the beholder, or is that just a messaging piece?
No, it's about a worldview. I'm happy you raised that question, that observation again, because this speaks to our democracy. I'm sure you have heard someone say at some point, if you don't like it here, go back to Africa, or even if you don't like it here, go back to the Caribbean, or what have you. Here's the problem. The problem is we have come to hold modern democracy at the apex of human survival. Now, I believe in democracy. I love democracy. But the problem is we look at other political systems, and we compare democracy to these systems. So in other words, we compare democracy to feudal monarchy or dictatorship or autocracy, and we say, look at how great our democracy is. So anyone who complains, the question is, well, you're better off. But that is not the real question. The question is, what is democracy? And if we measure democracy against its noble goals, we will now find a failure, a fault line in modern democracy. Mm-hmm. But we are not prepared to do this because it's easier to scapegoat others and say, look how great you have it here, without asking, what are the spiritual underpinnings of a true democracy? Mm-hmm. And we are not prepared to go there because then we would question the way we administer everything from criminal justice to all of the laws, just and unjust, or just practiced unjustly, or what have you. So we don't want to be indict ourselves as leaders of democratic nations. So we would never ask ourselves, are we treating our people in the most, in the best, in a manner that is, that would sufficiently enable people to grow and to strive and to give, you know, reach the same level of survival as ourselves. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. In Canada, the Canadian, the average Canadian person, according to the United Nations living standards, we are sixth. We probably dropped to about nine, I believe, right now. But let's see, we are sixth on the scale. But the North America, the Indians, the indigenous Indians, are 66th. So we are happy in a democracy where we are sixth and we are comfortable, but we will not challenge the fact that why aren't the indigenous Indians, why aren't they as well at sixth, the level six? But we will always make an excuse that how comfortable they are. And I think this is a universal way that leaders look at life in at life. That's a universal worldview that most leaders seem to share. It's why if you don't like it here, go somewhere else, rather than saying, are we practicing a spiritual-based democracy? Because remember, we always argue that the founding fathers, we say they were, you know, they had the, you know, spiritual overtones in, in the things that they do, and we always claim, you know, the rights to health and happiness as inalienable rights. So why not look at our democracy in that context? It doesn't matter if our leaders are Christians or not Christians. We have not seen any evidence where leaders are prepared to look at our democracy and measure it against its noble goals, not against other failed systems. That is the problem.
So when we get, and something, let me back up to something that you said earlier about, because our nation was in, has been in conflicts, and that's all we know. I can really, really say amen to that one in a big way. Because when, in this business I'm in, the ones that are rewarded in it financially are the ones that raise hell on the radio and fight and have people, you know, mad and screaming and hollering. And, you know, I get more phone calls up here before and during my show when I'm arguing with a guest or raising hell, or they are. People love that. But when it's not, you know, they don't gravitate toward it because it's like, that's just, is that the, is this a, in the, our DNA here that we just want to fight and we just can't stop fighting? And, you know, just, we just can't. And therefore, it's like, is there going to ever be a happiness?
A period of calm.
Yeah.
I, you know, that is very interesting. I always try to, think about that a lot. Like, should I be, or can I be optimistic of a better world, you know, a better society, a more normalized worldview? And as much as I try, I can't see it. Because it seems to me everything is ultimately based on racial and cultural superiority. And we can see it exercised when people are given power and authority over others. We have a system, a global system, where leaders of the world fail to recognize that the people are sovereign and that they serve the people. And in order to build a better society, we have to understand the needs and needs, not in context of culture, but in context of in context of race or culture or position or status, but in terms of humanity. And this is why we see the noblest of causes, like the like a justice system, why it fails, because it's, although it appears to be based on fairness and justice, it still comes down to racial and cultural superiority, position, status, wealth, and all that. Is this baked into the DNA, as you have said? It is big. Until we can see, until we can understand the oneness of humanity, until we can understand that human needs, and we are crying out for fairness and for justice, things will never change. But I believe that we have to come to a different place. And unfortunately, but that place has to be based on more our spiritual needs taking precedent over the physical and the other needs, that we, the economic needs that we have. It must take precedent. In other words, it must guide the decisions that we make. That will lead us to create better, a different ecosystem. And that is one of the reasons why we have suggested in our work that every nation should install a ministry of happiness and a minister of happiness, because the attributes of happiness, or happiness itself, has the highest potency for transforming individuals, marriages, communities, you know, nations, and the world. And it may sound maybe even laughable, but when you look, we have a position paper that we have written, or when you look at the paper and you think about it, we could not come to a different conclusion in terms of political systems, or how we may want to underpin our political systems, with this question of happiness. Because it's also baked into the Constitution. And the only way that we can change a system or influence a system is by institutionalizing that which we strive for. So in other words, if we want an educated class, we'll have to institutionalize it. We can have everyone developing their own educational system. And that's why it troubles me when people say, I'm responsible for my own happiness, totally disregarding that we are interdependent beings. And our happiness, the apex of our happiness, is our relationship with each other. And not just the relationship with each other as family or as people who are married, but I mean the totality of our relationship with each other, whether it's platonic relationships, whether it's a supervisor-employee relationship, whether it's a national relationship between nations. Anyhow, every aspect of our relationship must be underpinned by this idea that we are responsible for each other. Everything is intrinsically linked. And if we keep moving away from that to this class-based structure that we have, and it is a class-based structure, it's an economic class-based structure, it's a physical class-based structure, if we start moving away and start understanding. Now, some people may look at this kind of language, maybe a socialism or what have you, but if that be the case, then let it be. And the reason why I'm saying this, because at the end of the day, everything that we decry, we practice. Like, we practice corporate welfare. Now, what is that? You know, so it's a bit hypocritical. So we've got to come to the table with a certain amount of honesty and integrity, you know, and authenticity, if we want to move forward. And I think we are not being helped by the great institutions of learning.
Absolutely. And let me throw into this mix. Let me go all the way Old Testament right quick.
Good.
The reason why I am is because since the beginning, from Exodus, from the beginning, people have not been happy, even though the Lord made a way. You know,
right.
I mean, I'm saying, getting it is a lifelong pursuit.
Absolutely. Well, yes, of course.
And therefore, if it's a minister of happiness or whoever, we need to work on that forever and ever. If you go back into your scripturally speaking, for my Bible people out there, Yeah. The Israelites got things, you know. They complained, and look at what the Lord did. Right. And they still complain. So all my Israelites today, y'all happy?
Right. Well, one of the things I think we have done, we have made happiness an event.
Yeah.
In other words, happiness for most of us, not most of us, but happiness for a lot of people are events. In other words, the marriage, the great day at the beach, the great baseball games. So we really don't understand the nature and the capacity of happiness. And until we go, we move, like you have said earlier on, happiness is something that we live. It's a life that we live.
Yes.
We have made it events. Now, the other thing, too, of course, happiness is both in the spiritual and the natural.
Yeah. Hold to that, because we need to take a break. And
okay,
I want you to talk about the spiritual and the natural, because I do realize that, you know, at the end of the day, we need to incorporate that in. As one of the four things you talked about, spiritual, moral, social, and intellectual. So let's take a time out. Researcher Errol Gibbs with the Optimum Health Index is with us today. And if you're a Christian and you're frowning and angry and hostile, exhale, y'all. Let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
It's What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Hello, Nashville. Coming up Wednesday afternoon at 4, news from the community and after the traffic report, best-selling author Gary John Bishop will discuss his latest book on how to stop sabotaging yourself. And at 5 o'clock, so you want to be Nashville's next mayor. This week, the candidates in studio are John Sewell and at 5:30, Nolan Starnes. Your questions and comments are always welcome.
That's What's the 411 with Sharon Kay, twice a week, every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. and every Sunday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. right here on Jazzy 88 WFSK.
When you went car shopping, you meant business. You aced vehicle history searches and test drives. You out-salesmen to the salesman. Now you've got your wheels. If you manage that, you can get your retirement plan on track. Visiting aceyourretirement.org can help. With 401k tips and smart savings strategies, you'll have the info you need to get more for your future. Go to aceyourretirement.org, because when it comes to speeding past financial challenges, you're an ace. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
This has been a reminder from community-minded Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And researcher and author Errol Gibbs is with us. And next time, if we get a chance to check in, Marjorie, his capable better half or three quarters, will be with us in that discussion. Now, before the break, Earl, you had mentioned,
yes, ma'am.
I just backed up to something that you said earlier that I wrote down,
mm-hmm.
spiritual, moral, social, and intellectual.
And physical.
Physical.
Right.
Let's stop on the spiritual for a while and talk about the why is that in the equation and how important is it to obtaining happiness?
Right. First of all, for the benefit of your audience, what we have done is we have treated happiness and we have treated life in a more in an abstract way. Even spirituality, we have treated it as though there's an abstract notion. When you can actually measure spirituality, you can actually measure happiness. Now, if you're driving along the road, you have a speedometer, so you know how fast you're going. Also, everything has an index, so there has to be a measure. The reason why we have this difficulty with spirituality or with happiness or these higher attributes is we don't have a real index to measure it against. We can measure against the price of our house or our car. We can do a lot of things. But when it comes to these very important virtues, now, the measure is quite different. For instance, if you ask me, how do I know a man is spiritual? And it's very clear. I know a man who is spiritual by the demonstration of the fruit of the Spirit in his life. Mm-hmm. If he demonstrates love and peace and, you know, and mercy and compassion, then that is the measure. Now, we may not be able to quantify it in any way, but of course, it's a demonstrated measure. You can see it. Now, happiness also. Now, but happiness, to begin with, we have to understand, when we talk about optimum happiness, we are talking about a higher imperative, which is joy. Joy is the sentinel that guards the soul when happiness takes flight. In other words, happiness is comprehended in joy, but joy is not essentially comprehended in happiness. Mm. Because joy is the higher spiritual attributes. It's driven by the higher spiritual attributes like love and peace and contentment. Mm. Happiness in the material or the physical side of the equation, driven by material things, you know, the great car, the great house. So in other words, when we think we are pursuing happiness, we are actually pursuing materialism. Mm. That is not to say that material things do not bring us happiness. Of course it does. If you have the right amount of finances to purchase a better house, a better car, to take care of your kids, yes, that would bring a certain amount of happiness. The problem is that is not sustainable. It can only be sustained with joy. For instance, what if we had a catastrophic accident or we had a catastrophic health issue? What does that do to our happiness? What if we lost that great job? What does that do to our happiness? But joy is what will sustain us, because joy rises much beyond the material aspects of happiness. So really there's a spectrum of happiness, and we are promoting our work. In order to reach the higher level or the optimum happiness, mm-hmm. we must have that spiritual nature within us. Otherwise, it becomes a purely mechanical, purely physical, mm-hmm. purely event-driven. And that is why we see so many failures in people's lives, mm-hmm. especially when something catastrophic happens. We just lose faith. We go from fear, anxiety, depression, and in some cases, mm-hmm. suicide, like mm-hmm. I have had the opportunity to, if it's not my own family, to understand that this is a reality for some individuals mm-hmm. who have lost all hope.
Right.
But we did create what we call a happiness index. And our happiness index is based on a means by which you can actually quantify mm-hmm. the, some of the conditions that would bring happiness. And we donate, we enumerate them, such as career, character, education, mm-hmm. forgiveness, health, humility, personality, religion, self-esteem, socialization. So we developed a questionnaire based on these 10 key happiness indicators. So because these indicators are what we live every day. We try to get a better career. We observe our character. We educate ourselves. You know, we must have forgiveness. So they are real measures. So happiness is not simply an abstract notion. When we move away from the notion and when we consciously went to measure our lives on the basis of these 10 key happiness indicators, maybe they are 20, I don't know. We found that these 10 were relevant enough to give us a good sense of where we are, you know, in terms of if my health is impaired, I may become unhappy. Not necessarily so, but it may contribute. For instance, if I ask you a question in one of our questionnaires, and the question was, do you have a good relationship with your husband or your wife or your brother or your sister? The answer is either 0 or 10 points. And the reason being, we do not wish for it to be abstract because we should be able to answer that question in the affirmative. Right. If we can't, then we are putting forward that it could be a source of unhappiness. So it's the accumulation of the elements of or the sources of unhappiness in all of these areas. It what brings us to this point of sometimes fear and anxiety and depression and even suicide. So we have a method that you can actually observe, and it's not a strenuous method, where you can actually observe your own life and you know, based on this index that we have developed. And you can also get into what we call a self-improvement. So we are not sociologists or psychologists or by any measure, but however, this whole process that we have developed, the methodology, is self-directed. So it is up to the individual to decide, do I have the right career? And I could do some analysis to determine that. Am I a forgiven person? You can, again, it's self-directed. My health, my personality, am I truly not so much religious but spiritual person? Mm-hmm. Meaning that it's not how much, not that I go to church every Sunday and I'm at every Bible school lessons or I go to every conference. The question is, am I demonstrating the attributes of spirituality in my life? Because it really matters not how many times we attend services or what have you. Yeah. It is the demonstration, you know, of spirituality is what is critical. Yeah. To your own survival and your relationship with others and to your happiness. So what we need is a barometer to measure happiness, just like we have what you call World Happiness Index. And one of the reasons why we are striving to do the work that we do is we have looked at many of the studies around the world, and what we found is that rather than, they are mostly what we call top-down studies. And we believe if you want to measure the happiness of a nation, it should be a bottom-up study. So in other words, the happiness, the aggregate of the happiness of the people mm-hmm. is what translates into the happiness of the nation. Mm-hmm. And it's not essentially what the nation affords the people, because you could live in a very wealthy nation and still be unhappy and be impoverished.
Right.
So the methodology is we have some concerns, but you know, we have a long way to go, and we are trying to build collaborations so that we could bring this new perspective, yeah. or we could change the narrative, actually,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
about happiness, and that's what we'd like to do. Now, having said that, the United Arab Emirates and Bhutan have implemented a Ministry of Happiness and a Minister of Happiness, so it's not far-fetched. And there are considerable efforts to bring the whole nation to a higher stage of happiness, because if the nation is happy, we'll have less criminal just incarceration. Yeah, we'll have a more equitable society. So it's not just, you know, it's not an illusion by any stretch. It is it can become a reality, but it requires major transformation in leadership.
Well, that's amazing that the United Arab Emirates would be
United Arab Emirates, yeah,
and would be the ones that. And they're sitting there with all that oil and wealth.
Right.
They would be you know, they've got everything but money can buy, that they would even, you know, be thinking in the realm of, even though we have it, we're still not happy. I mean, that's deep.
The reason why, again, is the other question that I raised, is too, is the fact that if we predicate happiness on events and on things, mm-hmm. and that is the danger that even those nations that aspire to happy nations, there's still the question of race, culture, class.
It is.
Because at the end of the day, it's always about me and my color, my race, my culture, you know, my class, and we look after each other depending on the pecking order.
Yes,
you
know? Absolutely.
So there's a lot. I mean, I had hoped in my lifetime that I would see the evidence of the power of the Christian faith, or any faith for that matter, as far as I'm concerned, demonstrating its true attributes. And today, I'm still scratching my head at my age, still scratching my head and wondering, why are the religious people, I would say, virtually sitting on the sidelines, to be honest.
Amen.
And the reason I'm saying this is not the fact that they're not there visible in terms of structure and all that.
Yeah.
I am talking about in terms of understanding what their purpose is, and demonstrating that, and you know, and speaking out against atrocities of any kind, even though it may be costly.
Yeah, we know in this country very well, because we are living it, see it. It's in our faces all the time. So I know exactly what you are talking about, because many of us feel the same way you do. We just want to see it in our lifetimes and not be blinded with cataracts or so blind you
can't
see. We want to know that, you know, that God has done what he said he was going to do as far as that's concerned. But I mean, everybody's having difficulty being optimistic right now, because it just doesn't. But you know, God's got it. He's got it.
Optimism has a cost, if you want it to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Let me say something, and I don't know if I'm treading on your political grounds here, but let me say something that is so mind-boggling to me as a Christian. It's the question of appointing judges in the United States.
Yeah.
And judges appear to me you're either a liberal or you're a conservative judge, as it were. And I am saying to my wife, when is it some institution in the United States, maybe a religious institution or the evangelical organ, when are they going to purchase a slot on the television and make one simple statement? A judge is a righteous judge. He's not conservative. He's not democratic. He's not whatever. A righteous judge. I have not heard that from a single person in the United States or anywhere on the planet, that a judge is a righteous judge.
Amen.
How does a judge come to be a black judge, a green judge, a yellow judge, a conservative judge, a Republican judge?
Truly.
A judge is a righteous judge, and that's the end of
and
it.
And that's that.
And I'm still struggling with that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell
no
you
No one
what.
Has stepped up and said, oh, no, we are making a mistake here.
Right.
A judge must first and foremost, under this nation, under God, be a righteous judge.
Yeah. Well,
why haven't we heard that?
You
why
won't
haven't
hear
you
it
and
in this
I
country.
Heard that statement?
You won't hear it in this country, because everybody here likes to fight all the time. Anyway, Earl, thank you so much for your time again. And, you know, we'll continue to pursue happiness with you.
Oh, certainly. I'd like to sit with you one day and have a great chat. Come
definitely,
to Tennessee
definitely.
Or you come to Toronto.
Oh, yeah. Well, that you know, that could happen. Now, tell the audience how to find out more about your work and your book, of course.
Yeah. I'm writing three to five e-books, and I'm relaunching my whole project next spring. So I'm taking a break to write, and the reason why I'm doing this is the book is written pretty generically, and I want to write a book that says how to cultivate a happy personality how to cultivate a happy marriage, how to cultivate a happy community, how to cultivate a happy nation, and how to cultivate a happy international community. So I want to write five e-books, about 25 to 50 pages long, and release them all next spring.
Excellent.
We should really have great chat next spring on this
issue. We will. And you take good care. Be well, and tell Mrs. Gibbs that I ask about her,
ma'am.
Please.
Yes, ma'am. And take care of yourself.
You too.
Many success to you on your radio station.
Thank you so much. All right, bye-bye. That was Earl Gibbs. We are seeking after happiness. And, you know, hopefully y'all is working on it. You're working on it at your own, in your own mind. And I know someone that's feeling real hopeless about a situation. But, you know, God is able. And he's ready, willing, and able. So I don't even know if that person is listening. But, you know, I'm sending it out there to the universe. Let me leave you with Psalm 29:11. The Lord will give strength to his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.